Okay, we are at quorum. We'd like the committee to come to order. If members could please take their seats. And I'm hoping that Representative Murdoch has painstakingly looked over the minutes here and would be willing to move the minutes of our last meeting here, which I believe was March 5th.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move those.
Representative Murdoch moves the approval of the minutes for March 5th, 2009. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for March 5th, 2009 are approved. We have one bill on our agenda today. It's House File 501, Representative Mariani's bill on alternative graduation means created for students who have not successfully passed the Minnesota Basic Skills Test. Representative Mariani, would you like to move your bill?
Sure, I would move
House File 501
be recommended to pass and
approve
the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be referred to the
Chief. Representative Mariani moves that House File 501 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. My understanding is that you have an author's amendment, House File 501 labeled DE2, and all of you should have that.
Mr. Chair, I would move the DE2 amendment, and this is delete everything amendments, so just put the bill in the shape I want it to be in. It obviously incorporates the provisions in the bill as introduced, but then there's some additional provisions, and I would like to incorporate an oral amendment on page 4, line 9, to strike the word develop and after the word not.
So strike develop and?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. 4.9 after the word not. I would incorporate that in my amendment.
Oh, sorry.
Who the first name?
As well as on page 3, line 13. So on 3.13, it reads the number of after the first of, insert and. So it should read the number of and percent of students who receive the notation of high achievement in the.
Mr. Chair, that would be a technical correction to line 3.13, and first part of my oral amendment is just basically acknowledging that the department has already been developing an alternative, and I don't want to get in the way of having that work be further developed. So I would incorporate those in my as an oral amendment to my amendment.
All right, any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, could you just read the second part of the amendment?
Absolutely. Let's start with, I'll read the whole thing. Looking on page 4, on line 4.9, strike develop and, so it should read, and the Education Commissioner must not implement any alternative to the. So taking out develop and. And then on page 3, on line 3.13, the number of, insert and after the first of, so it should read, the number of and percent of students who receive the notation of high achievement in the. And that is a just a technical change, correct? Any other questions, comments on the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. All right, the DE2 amendment is adopted. And Representative Mariano, would you like to tell us about your amended bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members. I actually had a whole bunch of notes, but I'm going to cut through my pen and just be as concise as I can. I've asked a number of people to come and testify this morning about the urgency and the importance of this legislature acting on the consequences, the potential consequences of the grad math test for this year's junior class in regards to their ability to graduate from high school next year. Mr. Chair, members, we spent a week on this issue. I think it was time really well spent because this issue really goes to the core of a number of important issues. The nature of our assessment system, of our accountability system, what kind of assessments we would use, what is the purpose behind them, who are we holding accountable, who's paying the consequences, and of course, the all overall most important thing, what kind of policies are we doing that drive student achievement that matches the highest possible rigorous standards that we desire as a people in the state of Minnesota. And it seems to me as I look through this issue, and this is where I'll just cut to the chase, is that I think what many of us have struggled with is the notion that one single measure in time will attempt to answer all of those questions, and that we would attach a huge consequence to the young people in Minnesota based on that one single measure in time. So you're going to hear a lot of rhetoric today about how this proposal is backing off the standards, we're lowering standards, that, you know, without this one single measure, we're not committed to a culture of high standards out of our K-12 expectations. And nothing could be further from the truth, Mr. Chair and members. And next week, we're scheduled next week to hear Representative Beinert's bill. And a number of you have served on the committee over the last couple of years know that we've been attempting to frame, in my mind, a much more mature, fuller conversation around the kind of measurements, the kind of assessments, and therefore the accountability system that goes along with those assessments that, in fact, are more mature, that are well-rounded, that uses the concept of multiple measures. If you think about some of the pushback that you're hearing from your own people, and this cuts across both sides of the aisle with NCLB, a good chunk of, yeah, we hear about how the feds haven't given us enough money and all that stuff, but frankly, a good amount of that is really a pushback on the simplistic notion that everything's going to hinge around the use of one exam in a point in time. And we've heard testimony from folks last year and this year about how important, in fact, exams could be in terms of providing formative type of information that can inform instruction. And it seems to me that we've got a kind of a mixed mass and a confusion of what our exams are supposed to accomplish. Members, the NCAA assessment really meets two purposes. For state purposes, we want to know how our students are doing at any point in time, but the NCLB wants to know how our systems are doing, and there are consequences that flow from those systems as a result of how the measurements come out. Excuse me. It occurs to me that what we've done, however, is we've taken a framework that's really primarily been meant to measure the efficacy of our system, and have mismatched that with consequences for students. Currently, 34% of our grade 11 students have demonstrated proficiency on the upcoming NCAA 2 exam in math. 20% of those have shown partial proficiency, and 45% are showing, these are under unmotivated conditions, 45% show not meeting proficiency or partial proficiency. Based on research nationally, we can intelligently, we've heard testimony to this effect in this committee over the last couple of years, we can intelligently expect an upward bump of 7 to 9% in test scores under a high-stakes consequence. In other words, under a motivated conditions, because the thinking is that students will be strongly enough motivated that you would have that little bit more effort that goes into that. That still, however, places this current 11th grade junior class, based on all our measurements up to now on their performances relative to these standards, at about 62% passing. The question before us then is what happens to the remaining 38% of all Minnesota juniors if that's the high end of failure and therefore the high end of not being able to move forward with their education. With less than a year left, can remediation result in passing the math grad at levels that we're willing to accept? If not, are we okay with denying diplomas to hundreds? And I meant to look up the figure. I wanted to say thousands, but I'm pretty sure it's at least hundreds of students next year who otherwise may be ready for, ready and wanted to continue with their education. It seems to me, we changed committees, but Leslie, you're welcome to join us at any time. I can leave breakfast. Mr. Chair, it seems to me that, I lost my train of thought. I'm thinking about that breakfast.
Yeah, I just breakfast now.
Actually, I'm pretty much done with this part. I think it's important that we hear from people who are out in the trenches, if you will, who are interacting with our students on a daily basis, to hear from them. What they think the consequences in the worst case might be, and some thoughts perhaps that they may have in terms of how to address this. It does seem to me that, I think as Representative Dietrich likes to say, and rightly so, that one of the things we should be thinking about is developing multiple pathways that are both high quality, rigorous, but full of hope and quite doable, frankly, in a high-rigor way, but doable and meet the needs of our students moving forward into post-secondary. I have to say, Mr. Chair, members, I don't know where it serves us well as a state to stop the forward movement of students who want to go on to post-secondary. I, like most of you, do not accept that we need to depend on a remediation frame in post-secondary to remediate for inability to meet standards in K-12. But frankly, until we get it right with our K-12 system in regards to 100% meeting those standards, I would rather our students move forward if they so desire with their education as opposed to hitting the streets without a diploma. So members, there's a lot at stake here, and there's a lot of good points on all sides of this issue, and I hope that we'll have a bit of a debate about that this morning. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to stop. When I come back, I'll walk through the rest of the amendment, but what I want to do is ask the witnesses to come forward and spend some time with us sharing their thoughts and concerns with the current rubric of the GRAD math test.
Great. Well, we have a number of testifiers, and we'd like to bring them up. We do ask that they be cognizant of the time. We have only about 3 to 4 minutes per testifier in order to get all the questions answered, as well as additional testifiers who would like to be here. So we'd like to call up Cindy Amoroso. If you'd please state your name for the record, and then you may proceed.
Cindy Amoroso, Director of Curriculum and Instruction with the Mankato Area Public Schools. Good morning, Chairperson Taft and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning in support of House File 501. There are many points that I could make this morning regarding the issue and the solution that we believe House File 501 offers us at the present time. 2 points, however, I want to spend my time on. First of all, what it is about House File 501 that we find attractive, and secondly, why we need a decision on this immediately. We don't believe the current law allows us to be successful under the current system. State education leaders, including superintendents, curriculum leaders, and principals, are in agreement that students should be held accountable for high standards. We want to do that in a way that is both successful and effective. House File 501 offers us the opportunity to do this. The proposal holds the student accountable for engaging in remedial coursework and attempting to increase their achievements. The proposed language would still allow us to hold students' diplomas if they did not do this. The proposal gives us the opportunity to work with remedial courses to identify what works best in increasing students' achievement on the grad, as well as providing successful interventions prior to the test. House File 501 positions us to offer a stronger math program for future students based on our experiences with these first groups taking the grad. The proposal gives us time to align any graduation requirements or assessments to the timeline for the new math standards and the 8th grade algebra requirement that we are transitioning to by law right now. The proposed language is clear and specific regarding the alternative. It does not put local administrators in a position to determine alternative criteria, nor put local administrators in a position to subjectively decide waivers for specific students. We need this decision immediately. Students, parents, and teachers need to know the rules prior to taking this test in April. Staffing is already being determined for the 09-10 school year. Curriculum materials and new courses are currently being developed and materials purchased. Students have already registered for their 2009-10 courses, and anyone failing the test will need to re-register, impacting current electives, staffing, scheduling, course development, and the need for materials. Budgets are tight for the 2009-10 school year. Every day, decisions for next year are being made in districts. Each day that passes complicates the options that districts and students will have for being successful with this new test and its results. We want to do the right thing, and we want to do it well. We need a decision as soon as possible to allow us to do so. We uphold the need for rigor and high expectations. We also need to ensure that what we ask for can be delivered successfully for students. The proposed alternative in House File 501 offers the opportunity to have high expectations and measure our students against them, while at the same time allowing districts and students the opportunity to get real results and act on those results. It offers the opportunity to work within our current realities to set up a long-term model based on actual results and data instead of conjecture, predictions, and assumptions, and a system that ultimately supports students in meeting our expectations of rigor. Thank you.
Any questions from members? All right, we will call up our next testifier, Paul Neubauer. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Paul Neubauer, principal of St. Francis High School. Chair and members, I'm also the site assessment coordinator for St. Francis High School due to budget reductions, and I'm just going to list a series of issues that I have with the grad test. First of all, I believe it's given too late for 11th grade students. I understand the conflict that exists and that we want to provide curriculum for students, and it takes until the 11th grade year. However, it really leaves us with 1 year for remediation and retesting, and that is an issue for us. We have to allocate staffing for remediation section. We have done that for math, for the reading, and for the writing. That approximates to about, I would say, one half of an FTE. We're not entirely sure how long the high-stakes test will take. We have, in our school, we will run a 2-hour delay on the 14th and 15th. In other words, seniors don't have to come in for 2 hours. We're going to test our 9th grade, 10th grade, and 11th graders. And we're not entirely sure if that's enough time for them. So just the logistics of the test, in order to test the kids, if 2 hours is enough, great. If it's not enough, we have to relocate to what we call our technical presentation room, which holds about 85 seats, and we have to bring all the students there, and we have to finish their test because we don't have classrooms for them. I have an issue with how many practice tests are available. It seems that we had the BST assessments, that there were more practice tests for parents, students, and instructors to go to use as resources for learning, for preparation for the test, and for remediation for the test. We have issues with our with some of our disabled students. Just so that you know, when we provide MCA testing for some of our disabled students, they are so significantly and severely disabled, we are to be trained in how to identify and interpret nods, gestures, and movements. And then we are asked to go back and re-ask questions to make sure that we interpreted those nods, gestures, and movements correctly. Testing in general, the participation, it seems as though it's a great thing for students to do is to go in and we're all fired up and we're going to take a test. I've been conducting reading retests. I've invited 75 kids. We have yet to pass that test. We're a school of 1,730 students. We have about 450 kids in a class. And we're down to 75 kids who have taken the reading retest. And I can tell you that I invite 75 kids and 30 of them show up for the test. The other 45 are absent that day conveniently. And so to wrap that around, to ask that we test our 11th graders, and if we had a 70% pass ratio, we would still have 126 kids that we would need to get retested, and we would need to remediate them throughout the course of the summer, throughout the course of next year, and still, at this time next year, we'll have 70 kids or so who either don't show up for the test, who will skip that day of the test, who aren't as interested in that test as we think they are, and aren't as interested in performing well in that test as we think that they should be. And so we'll wait till we get them in school, and then the logistics again are that we would go to their classroom, pull them out of their classroom, and have them take the test. And that's one day, that's a one-shot deal for these kids. Thank you.
Questions from Representative Obia.
Thank you, and welcome, Mr. Neubauer.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're from my neck of the woods, and I know that St. Francis has a lot of devotion and heart and no money.
You try hard, no money.
Yeah, and I know you try really hard, and a lot of these situations have been really challenging for you all. In terms of your budget, and there must be many districts in your situation, what kind of money do you have available for remediation in the first place for these kids?
Well, there's only our school budget. There is no money that comes in for remediation. There's nothing that comes to the site that says this money should be set aside for remediation. I'm the budgeter for our building, and we staff it and we budget it based on what we're allocated from the state. There is no remediation. There are no remediation funds.
And we have to be short on this, but I imagine you mentioned a number of the kids that would not pass the test. Maybe the high stakes nature would get them more interested to actually stick around to take the test because they would like to graduate and sadly leave you at some point. But if the test, there's going to be a test coming sooner or later, and it's only a matter of how it's implemented. So that's the will, I think, of all of us to get some kind of evaluation into course or whatever. But if indeed the current law goes forward, what would you do to try to remediate those 100-some kids? And what would you have to not otherwise?
Chair, we already have plans in place for remediation. We have, as a prior witness has already testified, we've allocated staffing, we've allocated budget. We have sections that are unfilled at this point, but we have sections that are allocated toward remediation of all of our state-mandated tests, and that includes writing, reading, and math. So we've already done all of that. It's just a matter of which kids are we going to pull out of their regular schedule and plunk into the remediation courses.
Thank you. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome to the Mubal. I guess I had a couple questions, but I'm going to shorten it down to just one. If we back, you know, I'm assuming, I'm just going to make a comment first, and that'll replace my first question, then I'll ask the second question. You mentioned about the remediation and how this is kind of a one-time test and we don't know and it's too late and all that sort of thing. I'm going to have to make an assumption that your instructors, your teachers, are assessing all during the school year. And I'm also going to make an assumption that your teachers probably have a good idea which students need some remediation, need help, and which ones don't, because they are assessing along the way. And I would submit that maybe this one-time test is probably more of another benchmark as opposed to an aha in terms of how the kids are doing. I think your teachers probably know that. So I'm not as concerned with the fact that the 11th grade test is the first time we're going to find out how they're doing, because I think they're assessing along the way because they're professionals and they're assessing those kids. But the question I have for you is more of a general nature, Mr. Neubauer. If we back away from having a test like this, if we say they don't have to pass it, do you think that will help kids come more often if they know they don't have to pass? And how will that help us? We also have been told that we have 30% of our kids going on to secondary education need remediation. How will backing off in this test help with narrowing that gap and getting those 30% kids up to speed for college?
Mr. Neubauer.
Chairperson and members, I would say that to answer the question, I fully support high-stakes testing. I would say that the amount of material that the students are supposed to learn and that we are supposed to teach is large enough, and that's the original conundrum is we need to have the 3 years in order to teach the students the curriculum and the material that they are to learn in order to pass the test. At the same time, the concern I have is that we only have 1 year of remediation. So I support high-stakes testing. We've been trying to figure out ways to increase the students' level of concern for showing up to take the test and for taking the test seriously. And it's just this year that we've come upon that we would pull kids out of, if they don't pass the test, we will pull them out of some of their elective classes. We'll pull them out of some of their current required classes, and we will remediate them. What that means is the following year, they'll have fewer elective opportunities. They will have to make up their required classes the following year in order to be remediated, to take the test. Did that answer?
Representative Demmer?
Well, my question was is how will not requiring the test and not requiring passage of the test help get kids better prepared for college? That was my question.
Okay.
And quite frankly, I've got an adjunct to that. The standards have been in place now for about 4 or 5 years, and I don't think they've changed a whole lot. So I'm curious about your concern about not knowing what to teach the kids. That's what I'm hearing, is that you don't know what they should be taught because we've got to wait until we see what this test is. The test is based on the standards which have been in place for 4 or 5 years now. I'm interested in your thoughts about why all of a sudden we don't know what's going to be on the test and we don't know what we're supposed to be teaching them. But again, the overall thing is, how will not requiring the test cause kids to be more prepared for college?
Chair members, I would submit that if we know what we're supposed to teach the kids, and I apologize if I led you in that direction. What I would say is, in the movement to get to the requirement for graduation, we've had four or five years of low stakes testing, I believe the next step could be that now for the students that didn't pass the test, we are going to require remediation. And that might be the answer for next year. Then we'll have a better idea of how many students we're talking about that won't pass the test and how many that will pass the test. And then the transition into the high stakes testing for grad requirement would follow.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to add to this discussion in that the state has been tinkering with standards and putting tests in place, and we have to take ownership, as the schools do, to the fact that this is a change that's occurring K-12. And it takes a while, as you implement these standards, for the learning to move its way up. And we are seeing, with the TIMSS results, we are seeing the change that we want, but we can't expect, just because we've changed the standards, that the kids that are already through the system already have the answers or have had the information given to them that we want them to. We know that isn't the case. So I think what this this bill and what this is attempting to do is to give us a couple years to provide the remediation so we can do the very best we can for the kids that are currently in the high school system, but allow the learning that we've implemented and the changes we've implemented K through 8 to occur so that the students are starting to come to high school with the skills we need so that they can pass that high stakes test when they get there.
Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to echo what Representative Norton was just saying. As a classroom teacher and somebody who's helped to write curriculum in my district, I understand that what we call it is scaffolding skills, and it's called scope and sequence. A few weeks ago, and I find this kind of contradictory, but the Department of Education came, Commissioner Segrin was here, and showed us this wonderful presentation about the math standards that have been embedded into the current Minnesota expectations for achievement. And what we were seeing was that at the very earliest grades, kindergarten on, they are introduced to a very narrow set of skills in those early years, and they are built on gradually, and this tree of skills grows and grows until they're in the upper grades. I think that's the way education should be built. And in essence, what I feel is going on with the current high achievement test, where the current 11th graders who were not introduced to that scaffolding in the earlier grades, is that there's punishment. It's almost a punitive way of looking at these students. Here's an expectation. You've not had the education, or you've not had the skill building underneath, but we're not going to let you graduate. And I just feel like it's contradictory. I don't think that that's best practices. I think what we're doing in the early grades right now is best practices. I'm excited about those new skills. I'm excited that our third graders test in the top, among the top nations in the world. I think that shows that those skills are being built and are working. But to punish 11th graders for having not been exposed to that very careful methodology and pedagogy, I think is very sad, and I cannot support this the way the test is, that we would punish this group of current seniors who would not be allowed to graduate.
Thank you, Representative Swales, and thank you, Mr. Neubauer. And now I'd like to call up Andrew Reznor. And I believe there are two other instructors. If you guys, if the three of you would like to come up at once, that is fine. It is two. All right. If you just want to introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Angie Rosner. I'm a math teacher at Eden Prairie High School. I believe that the MCA assessment was originally designed for system accountability and not for individual accountability. There's been a good discussion about standards, and I'd like to talk about my personal experience in Eden Prairie. We have very high expectations for all of our students, and when the standards have been introduced, it has taken us a while to embed those standards into our current coursework. We just recently changed our Algebra 1 requirements from 9th grade to 8th grade. We then had to go back and scaffold all the learning for our students to get the curriculum in place, a much more rigorous curriculum, so that students who are introduced to algebra in 8th grade are able to be successful. Then we've gone back and we've changed our requirements for all of our students. so that they will have an Algebra 2 requirement as well as statistics. We've done this so that we are ensuring that all students will have the opportunity to be successful on the MCA exam. Right now, our current juniors did not have the coursework necessary in order to be proficient. And so to hold these students accountable for this particular exam when they have not had that as a requirement, it takes a while for a system to embed those standards and to make sure that you have changed the whole system so all students are successful. I believe every single district in the state of Minnesota is working towards that, and we're working really hard because we want to give our students hope that they have everything necessary to pass this MCA test, because if they're going into it and they've never even seen an Algebra 2 text, to say that we're going to do a short-term remediation in their senior year where they've never even had the opportunity to get that curriculum is doing a disservice to our students. We're telling them that we're going to try to assess them on things that they haven't even done, and that's not appropriate. I really want to speak in support of this House File 501. We do need a short-term fix so that these current juniors are held harmless into what is currently going on to do this fix in the system. We believe that we do all the assessments throughout the year. I could tell you every single one of my students who might be at risk of currently not passing this test. We've given a practice test this year. We are doing some remediation, but we know that there are many, many students who have not gotten the materials. So I just ask you, hold these students currently harmless. They haven't had the material. And in Prairie, we offer a very large breadth of math curriculum. We offer a third-year calculus. We have high, high expectations, but it's taken us a while to make that change. So I just thank you for the opportunity to visit with you this morning and just tell you about my personal experience and the advocacy that I have for my students and making sure that they're going to be successful on this MCA exam. Thank you.
State your name and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Julie Ketchel. I teach mathematics at Lakeville North High School, and I've been there for over 22 years. And I'm going to speak a little bit more to the aspect of I'm in the trenches. I've been teaching kids for 22 years, everything from Algebra 1 all the way on up to AP Calculus. And I teach pre-calculus and AP Calculus at present. So I hold my kids to a very high stake. I believe in testing. I believe in alternative testing. I can tell you personally, over the last 22 years, that I have had a number of students that have not done well on my test. There have been cases where I have had a student fail a test. Does that mean that that student did not know the material? To be honest, sometimes it did. But a number of times, it didn't. I've had students in the past that I know the material, backwards and forwards. I've watched them explain it to other kids around them. I've watched them do it on the whiteboard. I've watched them explain it to other students that are in the class. And for some reason, you've heard these phrases, test anxiety, math anxiety. It's out there. Some of you may have even felt it. And so I teach some of my students about it, but it's there and it's real. And so I've had a number of students that have not done well on a test, but I know they know the material. If I call them back in after school and say, show me this, show me you can do this, show me on a whiteboard, show me up on top, explain it to me verbally, they can do it. But to turn around and say, you have one shot, this is your high stake test, if you cannot pass this test, then you don't deserve a diploma. That doesn't make any sense to me. I have students that I can tell you were in my AP Calculus class and failed my final and turned around and passed the AP test with a 4. Does that mean they didn't know the material? No, obviously they did. But to turn around and say, on one test, at one point in time, if you can't show me right now and perform on this test, you don't deserve a diploma. That doesn't make any sense. We weren't raised under that system, and it doesn't make sense to hold these kids to that system and say, you don't deserve a diploma. I have kids that I know the material. They can do it. But on that day, can they perform on a test? Historically, the United States hasn't been a pure testing society. We haven't raised kids where you have to do this test, you have to do that test. That's kind of been the Western model. I taught for 2 years over in the Middle East, the European model, where everything was high-stakes testing. Those kids learn how to take tests. But But if you turn it on at the college level and compare graduate students, the United States graduate students versus the European system graduate students, our kids can knock those kids out of the water because they know how to think, not just how to test. And those statistics are there. So that's just what I wanted to speak to. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Jeffrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question actually for Ms. Rosner. You had mentioned that the you were concerned about the Algebra 2. Now, it's my understanding that the Algebra 2 is not being tested in this particular test. Am I incorrect in understanding that?
Well, as I have looked at the, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I have looked at the test, and we do have only one practice test, there are a lot of Algebra 2-specific course content that tie to the standards. So I believe that there is a lot of Algebra 2 content within there and a lot of statistics, which is a pretty high-level statistics that is within the Algebra 2 course. But I know that many districts, ours in particular, is even looking at the level of statistics has to be offered almost in a separate statistics course.
Could we? I'm not questioning you. I just would, at some point, if we could have the Department of Education, Mr. Chair, just verify if there are Algebra 2 questions in that test. That would
thank you for clarification of the standards and at what level those standards are achieved.
Yes. Thank you very much.
So if there is a representative from the department that can speak to that, please let us know. If not, we can get that information. Okay. Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank in particular Ms. Rosner. She's one of our fine teachers at Eden Prairie that I've had the privilege of getting to know, so thanks for your testimony, both of you. Ms. Rosner, one of the things that you raised, and I think it's an important discussion for this committee, is the point of the test, whether it's to measure the efficacy of our education systems or students. And I guess I personally almost feel it's both as to whether it's measuring how our schools are doing and then how our kids are performing. Would you agree with that, or do you really think that it's measuring two separate things?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe that the test was originally designed for the AYP purposes to really give us a systems accountability as to how we are doing in the area of standards, specifically in the area of math. The feedback that we get for individuals is not, it is specific as far as telling us on the strands, but we don't ever get to go back and look at that particular test to remediate on those particular areas, like questions, teaching about those test techniques. So I think it gives us some individual accountability, but I don't believe that was the primary purpose of that. It doesn't give us right now the feedback like we would do with our students on the test that we give for that. When we were looking at the basic skills, we did go back and could really kind of tell where they needed remediation in those particular areas. And right now we haven't had that, at least on the feedback that we've gotten, and not on an individual accountability purposes.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, if I can follow up. So after the students have been taking these tests, just sort of as in preparation for implementing the high-stakes testing, you're not getting the same type of information on the areas where a student may be weak in particular areas on the math? Am I understanding you correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bloom, I believe that we do get through the strand data on the standards, and right now we haven't been able to, I'd say, go back and easily identify what type of questions or how we're going to teach to remediate on that test. So we do get some data back, but I would say that it hasn't been helpful at the current time in helping us to remediate. Mm-hmm.
Representative,
if I could ask one final question, and it's for either of our two testifiers or two teachers. You both discussed, and I think this and Representative Swales and Norton, I would echo their comments in terms of whether or not our schools are preparing students every step of the way to get to this high-stakes test, which is important. But I guess I'm wondering about what discussions are going on. I know I've talked with the board members at Eden Prairie who are interested in going to an end-of-course test to try to really help, you know, capture students after they've covered the material. And, you know, sometimes there are lapses in between courses and that with your high school schedule to try to maximize success. But what's being discussed at either Eden Prairie or the Lakeville schools with regards to, you know, that kind of assessment of our kids even down in the elementary grades? You know, if kids are doing poorly in math, that tends to compound from year to year. And, you know, we do have a problem if we're letting it go until they reach the end of their junior year and then saying you're not going to graduate. But I guess I'm wondering, how are the districts and teachers and administrators working to try to say, you know, if the kid's not doing well in math, we need to remediate them, whether it's over the summer or, you know, I don't know. I mean, are kids even held back anymore? I don't know if I've heard of that even happening recently. I'm not advocating that, but I'm saying we've got to figure out a way to make sure that they're getting it, that they're grasping the material before they move on to the next level.
Anita, you can respond to that.
Mr. Chair, if I can respond to that. At present, I would say that a lot of school districts are engaged in what we might consider a mad scramble. It's been a huge heads up, and it was a little bit easier for us to deal with when the test was at the eighth grade level, because you had a number of years that you could, after identifying those kids, be able to monitor and adjust. And so being in the trenches, trying to figure out, okay, what do we do now if these students are identified at the end of their junior year and they're going to be denied a diploma otherwise, it's a mad scramble to try and figure out what can we do to monitor and adjust and figure out how to remediate these kids so that they can be successful. I agree with you that that has to be done at an earlier age. And so that's one of the reasons why the BSP in eighth grade was a little bit easier solution for schools to deal with in terms of where do we need kids to be. Part of the discussion is that they wanted the high-stakes testing to hold a high standard, and so it was moved to the end of the junior year. So at that point in time, you could assume that kids had learned more material, and you could put higher-level material on the test. The problem with that is it's very little time to monitor and adjust after that. There's so many different directions. Sometimes it's summer school, sometimes it's remediation classes. As Angie had mentioned, that they're holding, you know, different classes that kids can switch scheduling and go in that direction. So at this point in time, schools are trying to be creative and trying to figure out what are ways that we can quickly remediate. The problem is, sitting in a math department going, we don't know what's going to happen yet. We don't know for sure if this is what's going to be determined. This is why we really, really need a quick solution to this. We need to know this is exactly what's going to happen. Students will be allowed to retest if they, you know, take it a minimum of three times and are still not passing it, then they can be held accountable to their own school standards. Because schools have high standards, we want to hold kids to a high standard. And so we, as math departments, need to have a plan as soon as possible so that we can figure out what to do with these kids that need the extra help. If that answers your question.
Thank you. And now I'd like to call down Peyton Rod, another testifier, and I do have a series of questions from members, and we'll get to those.
Chairman Caff, committee, thank you for inviting me. My name is Peyton Roth. I'm on the Edina School Board. I've been on the board for 10 years. I'm also representative for the 287 Intermediate School District for Edina. I've been involved in trying to come to grips with this grad test for the math for some of the specific reasons you've already heard. I was involved at the rule-setting testimony to try to get some reality from coming from a parent perspective and a school board member's perspective on how to handle student achievement and what does the Minnesota diploma really represent. For me as a school board member, we're supposed to be reflecting what our community is looking for. And I know for Edina and probably quite most other school districts that the district is looking for the whole student to be educated, not just a particular subject area. And right now, the way the 10th or 11th grade math grad standard is structured, there's no options. We have no leeway to do what we think is best for kids. And as a school board member, you're always trying to do what you think is best for kids. And so, with the 501 bill, it gives us some avenues, and I guess that's my primary reason for being here, is that it does give us avenues to work with kids and to help them to be successful. I'm not sure you know, in the broader scope of things from a community, is if you increase the dropout rate or decrease the graduation rate, that's in the best interest of Minnesota in any way, shape, or form. Because I think you've heard testimony from a number of people that a single test does not create student achievement. There's more to it. It's more complex than that. You have to work and create a system that creates student achievement. And again, as a school board member, we put a system together. We have fine arts, we have mathematics, we have sciences. We basically put together a complete system, and as another testifier was talking about, it's a system that's built from beginning of school, from kindergarten on up. It's a structure, and what we're faced with right now, based upon the last spring's graduation studies, is there wasn't the right structure there to make students successful. And until we can get that structure in place, it's not fair to the students to hold them accountable, because the system is not getting them what they need. So I guess that's kind of the long and the short of it, because you've heard the testimony, you've heard about, I've sat in these hearings, you've heard about how much more useful formative testing is for student achievements than the summative testing. NCLB requires summative testing. So we're stuck with that. We have a lot of that information. As far as the grad being a predictor, we already are using predictor tests. We use the Explore test, which is a pre-ACT test in 8th grade. We use the Plan test in 10th grade. The state's paying for these tests already. We already have basic predictors. As some people pointed out, we know the kids that are struggling. And so what we have to do is figure out a system that works with, basically, we're talking the low-end kids. We're talking about kids that are struggling in school, that some kids just want an excuse to leave school. We have some kids that have substance abuse issues. We have some kids that are cognitive delayed. All these kids are in the mix. And when you all of a sudden say they're going to not be able to graduate, it's really not fair to them. And I guess if you go back to even the legal part of adequate notice, I believe that there is not adequate notice given so far, and I think parents will test that if there's sufficient numbers of kids that aren't graduating. So that's why I would support having some other avenues for school districts to utilize for a couple of years until we can really make the structure a little bit more robust and make these kids, or help these kids to be successful. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Downey.
Okay.
All right, members, I know that we have some other individuals who have asked to testify on this bill, but we also have two amendments before us that I want to make sure that we get to. First of all, Representative Depke, would you like to move your A1 amendment? Does everyone have an A1 amendment?
I think you should. If you don't, I have extra copies of it.
You have it?
Okay.
You only have A2?
Yes.
Representative Swales. All right, Representative Deputy, will you move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you want me to explain? You'll have to help me through this. This is the first time I've had
it. No problem. Well, Representative Deputy, move the amendment labeled A1, and if you just please, yes, explain the amendment to
itself. Yes, okay. And I do have a couple of oral corrections that Ms. Larson wants me to bring to your attention. First of all, do I move the amendment? Okay, I will. First, I'd like to move the amendment for discussion, please.
Okay, and now your oral amendment to it.
Okay, thank you very much. If you'll take a look at the amendment on line 1.6, the change. On the underlying part is eligible for a grant under Section 2, it should be under Section 4. And then if you take a look at line 0.9, it should be, instead of after line 27, it should be 26. And then line 1.10, where it says Section 2, that should be Section 4. Just quickly, the purpose of this particular... I'd like to move that we pass that oral amendment.
My understanding is that you're incorporating the changes into this, so we do not have to actually vote on that. So you can just incorporate that
into
it.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Just a quick explanation on this, and actually I had a couple of questions for our testifiers yet, but this particular amendment is in order to provide some of the funds that are coming from the federal government. I know that some of these funds are for 2 years only, but the purpose of this is to require that some of the federal stimulus funds be directed to graduation remediation activities to keep our students being able to graduate and to perform on our tests. And it is not tied to a dollar amount, but it would require that we take a look at what we have that's coming in the stimulus package. I know that there are funds in Title I. Not all of the schools are eligible for Title I. And also, we heard the previous testifier, the gentleman from Mankato Public Schools, say that funds are not particularly set aside for remediation. Several of our speakers have talked about remediation. Funds are not available. And I would like to have some of the funds that are coming to us be made available for remediation for our students.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I spoke with Representative Gretzky yesterday evening. She was collegial and kind enough to share her concept with the bill, and I really appreciate that, and I encourage her to indeed put this on the table for us. However, I agree only halfway with Representative Gretzky, and so I want to make a motion to divide the amendment, and I want to explain why I would do that. I would move that we divide the amendment after line 1.9, so that 1.1 and 1.9 would be one part of the amendment, or one amendment, and then the 1.10 to 1.21 would be...
1.8.
Is it 1.8?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1.8.
This is all...
There are two different versions of the amendment that are out here because of the fact one was drafted to the amendment and one was drafted to the bill. So what I'm looking at here is that where it starts with Section 4, Federal Stimulus Funds Directed to Graduation Remediation Activities, you're looking at dividing at that point. So anything above that would be a single division, and anything below that would be the other division. Correct?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair. And obviously here you have to have nimble feet to think through quickly. And so I would move that we vote on the second part of the amendment first. And
so right now, members, we are looking at Section 4, Federal Stimulus Funds Directed to Graduation Remediation Activities, and then it goes through the governor's application. Through then, the grant must not exceed a certain dollar amount per district. So that's what we are looking at first in a division. Representative McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering how Chair Mariani feels about this section.
Mr. Chair, members, I support the Section 2 piece. I think there's a lot of wisdom here. We've heard a little bit of testimony from someone about some limitations in regards to remediation resources. I don't think that there's anyone here who doesn't believe that in order to quickly, less than 1 year, attempt to comprehensively remediate a math standard is not going to require some resources, perhaps over and above what we currently have. And so I fully support Representative Dupke's efforts in terms of maximizing that. And so I'll leave it at that and urge support of the second part of this amendment.
Representative Norton, did you have a question?
I did, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani or Representative Dupke, have we been given confirmation that this isn't an acceptable and allowable use of the funds that we've received? One, and my second part would be because it on line 1.16 and 1.17, it talks about replacing funds. I know some of the money that we've gotten has some maintenance of effort requirements, and I just wondered if this is outside that maintenance of effort requirement.
Representative Martin, Representative Chair, thank you very much. I have discussed this with our advisor's office. They have assured me that this is an acceptable way to use funds as long as it's under the temporary fund usage. and it would support what we're doing as far as going forward for higher academic standards and support the national effort for that. So that is my understanding that it would be up to the legislature to make sure that a portion of the funds that are coming to the schools is used for this particular part.
And I think we can get somebody from the department to speak to that as well. And then, Representative Brown?
Mr. Chair, I would ask that we not take time to do finance in policy committee. Just, I don't think we should take this at all, Representative Mariani, and we're going to take a lot of time, which should be, all this time should be spent in the finance committee, not policy. I would ask that the amendment be withdrawn and offered there.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani, I will step in before Representative Dusky's office here.
We both serve on finance, and Representative Dusky, if you so desire, we can, I mean, I think Representative Riley offers good advice here. We can work together, and you have my commitment to work on that in finance.
Representative Dusky, it's your amendment.
That's fine. I think that Representative Griley has a good point, and I'm perfectly happy to do that and take it up in finance.
So Representative Dusky moves to remove her amendment. Withdraw her amendment.
Withdraw.
Thank you. Representative McFarland.
Yes, Mr. Chair, point of clarification. If this building have that portion in it, does it go to finance anyway?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, it would be my desire for it to go to finance at this point. And Mr. Chair, if I can very quickly just, I never did walk through the DE2 amendment. If I can just do it very quickly, I'd like to do that and just point out the major features of the amendment. There's several pieces here that are kind of technical language that actually come from the department. You'll find that on the first page. And then on the second page, when you get down to the bottom, you have basically the short-term solution language. All that new language from 2.29 all the way out to 3.14 is really short-term solution. So it sets up the conditions under which a student not passing initially the grad mat, the mat test would still be required to do certain things, retesting, remediation, obviously fulfilling all their other high school graduation requirements, and then still be able to have a diploma conferred. There is a additional piece here that emphasizes our desire our interest in success by having language that would allow districts to have a notation on a diploma of high achievement based on exemplary academic achievement. And then on the bottom of page 3, you have some more MBE language, which is too technical to get into, but basically just says, you know, we'll take away the alternative that was originally put in statute for LEP kids. It doesn't meet federal standards, and we should be holding those kids to high standards for sure. And then on page 4, we have the effective date, and this is basically the sunset provision. And so this is meant to apply for graduating seniors out to 2013 and 14. This language that makes it clear that we're not codifying this like forever in statute, which basically puts us on the hook to come back and be working on a meaningful alternative. That language also prohibits the commissioner from implementing, I took out the developing part, implementing any alternatives to the MAP grad required assessment without legislative authority. It's my intention to have this legislature be part of some of the bigger decisions if in fact we're going to be moving forward with an alternative. And then further down on that page, there is a prohibition of attaching a high-stake diploma denial condition based for the life sciences assessment. Finally, the amendment on page 5 creates an advisory group that will engage in a process through the Office of Educational Accountability that will engage a broad array of K-12 post-secondary private sector and workforce development as well as assessment experts to come together and make recommendations back to this legislature on how to best motivate students and improve students' academic achievement within the context of high stakes. So we're trying to get at this whole notion of the relevancy and the appropriateness of high stakes testing as well as getting at the issue of answers the questions around college career readiness tied to our assessments, and then also trying, by virtue of that, trying to answer the question of what's an appropriate level of proficiency. So that's the amendment. It'll keep us consistently engaged in being able to much more deliberately and carefully develop the alternative to the grad math high stakes test.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think this is a question for Representative Mariani, but possibly for the department. We've been having our discussion here today kind of on the assumption that there's approximately 38% of students who wouldn't be graduating as a result of the high-stakes test, and my understanding was that the cut scores for that would be determined kind of based on performance. Where do things stand with cut scores, and do we know for sure whether or not that percentage of kids actually wouldn't graduate?
Mr. Chair, I represent Downey, and the department can certainly answer the question. You're absolutely correct. The department has the authority to set that cut score at any time, and has done so in the past and relative to our other tests. The figures that I gave you, I gleaned from queries to folks in the Minnesota Assessments, the MAG group, Minnesota Assessments group. And basically, as I understand it, and they're pulling right out of department, test analysis data that we can find on site, all they did was basically look at the existing data in terms of how students are tracking, either exceeding, meeting proficiency, partial meeting, and then just not meeting. And so the figures are certainly quite debatable. But I think it's a pretty intelligent approach in terms of getting a broad understanding of what the universe of students would be. And then they also factored in this motivated condition, 7 to 9% effect on that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Van Damme.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And could we hear from the department? I mean, in my
view, I have them down as they are going to come down and testify. We do have one other amendment that I want to get to, though, before we bring them down. So trying to move that along to have them come down.
I'd be very curious to hear that. Mm-hmm. One of the questions I asked when we were having the generalized hearing on the grad standard issue was, are we actually adding to the population of kids who don't graduate, or is this test simply identifying the same population that wouldn't have graduated anyway, and if the cut score is set intelligently, my sense is that would be the case, and that we would still have kind of a lever to try and drive some of the systems changes. But anyway, so we can ask the department on that. I do have one other question for Representative Mariani, if I could, and that is my understanding of the negotiation in the governor's letter hints at this, that some kind of short-term relief needed to be coupled with the kind of absolute commitment to get to the long-term standard. And it appears to me that the bill talks about future studies and future legislative action. Is there anything from your perspective, Representative Mariani, in the bill, the amendment that you've got, the DE2, that actually creates a hard and fast commitment to get to the standard in a prescribed set of time, or are we really just kind of putting that off and saying we'll get to it later?
Representative Mariani.
My quickest response to that is, Representative Gowdy, we're sunsetting this provision, which in my mind continues to provide the necessary pressure on both the executive and the legislative branch to come up with a solution.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll try to be brief.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani, on page 3, line 310, that starts with the school board, I question why that's needed. It's saying that if the school board decides to put a notation on a diploma, that they have to notify the department first. And we're in the process, as you know, of trying to get rid of mandates. You understand you have to do this immediately and you have to show the percentage. And I would recommend.
Mandate,
so let's light it back out. That's my recommendation, to eliminate everything from that starts with the word A on 310 down to line 314.
Representative, I'm friendly to that.
So Representative Newton recommends an amendment on line 3.10, starting with a school board that decides to strike that language all the way down to line 3.14. Correct?
Right.
So all of the language there. Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign?
No.
Okay, amendment passes. And Representative Newton, I think now would be a good time for you to present your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to present the A2 amendment. In doing so, on line 1-5 of the A2 amendment, I would like to make an office amendment to delete the word diploma and on the student.
Representative Newton would like to take out on line 1.5, diploma, and on the student. So line 1.5 reads, school year must record on the student's high school transcript.
That's correct.
So it's incorporated into that. Any comments on your amendment before we open up for questions?
No. Mr. Chair, what this does is it requires that there's a notation placed on the high school transcript so whether or not the student has passed or has not passed the math test and the English test.
Discussion for members. Representative
Mr. Chair, and I'm just glad to see this kind of dialogue going forward. And I think we've heard testimony from everybody that we like testing and we're concerned about standards, but sometimes you have to take the gas off when your car is going too fast around a corner. And when I support the bill later, that will be my intention. And this is a work in progress. I think this amendment makes it clear that we do expect this to be a test that has value, and I think it preserves some of the intent, and I'm glad to see that different members working on it. I know that some are on the intent to work with the department and with stakeholders all along the way. So this is another good example of that kind of work, so we support it.
Mr. Chair, I support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Any other Representative Obama?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Newton, would your amendment be for because it also says the passing grade, I'm wondering if that is if they pass it on the retest as well, or if like the final chance to get it on there, or if they fail, it would be pushed on there as well.
Mr. and Representative Obermuir, my intent would be that could be changed if the student is able to pass the test later.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, I hesitate because the author has accepted this amendment, but I do have questions about recording a score that indicates passing when it's the passing point itself that's in question right now. We don't have a cut score. There's discussion about that. And I think holding individual students accountable for a complexity that's a bureaucratic complexity at the moment isn't really just.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also, like Representative Brenner, am very reluctant to accept this amendment. And I would like to make just a side comment. I was a part of the working group that has been looking at this in depth throughout a couple of months. And when this option was brought up within the working group, there was some strong opposition to labeling students as on their transcript. I think, like Representative Brennett said, we're questioning the test and the cut score and what is passing and what is true intelligence and what is a true, honest, valid definition of being math ready for college. And so to put this on the transcript before we have some real firm until we're really satisfied that our standards now match this test and this is a valid representation of math ability and success in college, I cannot support it. I do have a personal story that I don't like to share, but I'm going to anyhow in regards to this. My son was one of the first to take this 11th grade grad test, and that was when it was low stakes. And my son is not totally math inept. He doesn't have a phobia about math. In fact, we consider him fairly good at math. He's never really struggled with it. But when he took this test,
he failed it. He was not proficient. And so if that would have, and he does not take remediation very well. He is very independent and strong-willed. And so if that label would have went on his transcript, I'm not sure what kind of an impact that would have had on him and his ability to get in different colleges and then his success in college. And to be quite honest, he was not proficient on the test, but he's doing fine in college. Thank you.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to respond that on the transcripts that we have, at least in Okanagan, we already show the ranking of the student, where they are in terms of the rest of their class. We show whether or not they've passed the basic skills test. So this would simply indicate whether or not they have passed or not passed a test. And it doesn't preclude them from being able to take the test later, somewhere along the line, having their transcripts corrected.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani.
Dietrich is right that this issue came up in the ad hoc group. I would say that if we were talking about differentiated diplomas and conferring different diplomas, which at least one of the state does, then I would be terribly worried about this provision. But I don't think that it rises to that level of sort of permanent labeling and therefore determining a pathway for students. So I'm okay with the language. I would certainly want to work with it a little bit more as the bill continues to move forward.
Representative Dabney.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess a question for the author of the amendments, and perhaps I didn't hear it, but or perhaps you haven't said it. The rationale, what's the hopeful outcome of allowing this on the transcript? Can you speak to that, Representative Newton?
Representative Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, this actually is a compromise that was struck with the business partnership, and they had asked that we look, they realized, I think, that the bill is probably going to pass the way it is through the committee, and they would like to have some indication as to whether students are passing or not passing the test.
Representative Swell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've been talking a lot about raising the level of concerns and making this a test that students are serious about. And even though I am a person who probably would not have done well on the test, that's why I majored in English in college, and I've been very successful in that field, I can understand that we do need to raise the level of concern for students when they take tests. And if the majority of students know that a score is going to appear on their transcripts, they tend to take things a little bit more seriously. I still feel that we need to continue to have this discussion, but I think Representative Newton has offered kind of a way for us to work through this issue. I think as it goes through more committees, it will probably continue to get refined and become better, but I do think that perhaps we should move forward with this language.
Thank you. We will proceed now to vote on this amendment because we do have some other testifiers who would like to come forward. At this time, then, we have the Representative Newton. Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the amendment.
All right. At this same time, then, those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The amendment passes and has been added. Now we'd like to bring down Chaz Anderson, Deputy Commissioner from the Minnesota Department of Education. State your name and please proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Chaz Anderson. I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Education. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll first just really quickly address Representative Downey's question on how the test scores are set. The test scores are not set until the test is administered because we will not have the data as to how students perform until after they take the test, obviously. What we do is we have a standard-setting committee of Minnesota educators. Those educators make recommendations to the commissioner as to where to set the test score. The commissioner is generally under more so under a legal framework prevented from setting a cut score that's two standard errors above or below what the standard setting committee recommends. So she can't simply unilaterally set a cut score that's very different from what the standard setting committee has set. That will happen. The standard setting committee will meet in May. Shortly thereafter, the recommendation, the commissioner will set the cut score, and then immediately we distribute those results to school districts so that they can begin the process of setting the remediation or identifying the students that need remediation. This cut score is not necessarily going to be set at the proficiency rate, as I said, told you. It's really up to the standard setting committee to set the recommendation after looking at the impact data, and then the commissioner makes that final decision based on the recommendation of the committee. Just a few, really briefly, I know that we're short on time here. The grad test is currently based on the 2003 standards, so we've had those in place for 6 years. The math test does not include the Algebra 2 requirement. That was passed by the legislature in 2006 and was adopted as part of the 2008 standards. We're required to align our 2011 test to the 2008 standards, so currently we're aligned to the 2003 standards, which does not include the Algebra 2 requirement for course graduation. As mentioned before, I just want to, just one quick thing too, there's mentioned about special education students taking this test. Severely cognitive disabled students do not take this test. They take an alternative test called the MPAS. If the student meets or exceeds on the MPAS, they automatically receive the method requirement. If the student does not meet or exceed standards, then it's up to the district and the IEP to determine the graduation of that student. So they just want to clarify they do not take this test. In addition, ELL students that enter in the school in ninth grade are also exempt from the grad test. And we do also have reciprocity with other states. As you've seen with the letter you received this morning from the governor is very interested in working with this committee and the legislature on both a short-term and long-term solution. This bill does not contain a long-term solution. It is his desire to have those both put together so that it's very clear to stakeholders and school districts and the direction we're going to in the future. So in its current form, this bill is not acceptable, although we will continue to work with legislators, with Representative Mariani, and with stakeholders on this issue.
All right, thank you. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to start, I have a copy here. It's a sample of the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment Series. It's a sample. And when I go through this, there's a lot of questions in here that are way beyond Algebra 2 even. There are some in here that I think are even at the calculus level and many at trigonometry level, which is at least one, maybe even two classes above Algebra 2. And so, you know, when 37% of the kids pass the test, I don't think the problem is in the schools. I think the problem is the test, and I think that's pretty obvious to everybody. When I was in high school, the valedictorian of my class actually took the ACT test and got a score of, I think, 12 or 13. And that was the closest thing we had to the equivalent of this today. She went on to college after she finally got into college and did very well in college and now is doing extremely well running a business that has like 300 hotels. And so she's done very, very well. And so, you know, it wasn't until 25 years later I found out why she didn't do well on the test, but that's another story. But the point is that here is a one-time test for a very smart person that bombed the test and wouldn't have gotten a diploma if this were in place today, or it had been in place then. And obviously she's done very well because of, you know, how she's done in life, and so it wasn't that she wasn't smart enough, it wasn't that she didn't understand, it was just, you know, the one-time big stakes test. And so I'm very strongly supportive of this bill, and I think that we need to move it forward.
Well, thank you, Representative Faust. I believe Representative Mariani would like to see if members would like to stay about 5 minutes or if we would like to continue this discussion tomorrow.
I think we need to continue the discussion tomorrow because the K-12 DFL Democrats are going over the charter school bill, and that's very important to have us have a chance to do that, the amendments.
Representative Mariani, are you okay with that, with the conversation continuing until tomorrow?
Sure, members, we haven't heard from a number of people who are opposed to the bill, and so I've gotten a little bit of heat from not hearing from them, and I think it's fair that we do that. It is the nature of the beast here that, you know, you try to lay out a time frame and stick to it, but, you know, we ask questions, and so I don't want anyone in the public to think that this chair of this committee is not interested in testimony, but quite honestly, the time constraints that we have simply dictate that you can't take all the testimony that people want to offer. At some point, we have to move forward, but I do think it's fair to hear from some of our organized registered business interests in regards to this, and so I'd be willing to wait. I don't want to come back later this evening. I've got a really bad back. I don't know what kind of shape I'm going to be in at 6 p.m. this evening, so I'd ask that we lay the bill over till tomorrow.
Representative Mariani has said that we will lay this bill over till tomorrow, and that is the wishes of the committee. We are adjourned.